Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, Christoph, so we are actually, you tell me where we are.
We are now in Varsenare.
And where is Varsenare?
A little place near Bruges.
So we're close to the good chocolate.
Yeah, but there's good chocolate everywhere in Belgium. We're close to Bruges, yeah, and we're in front.
Myself and fellow journalist Christoph Muhl are in Belgium because I'm on a quest to find out the scale and size of motor doping in cycling, cheating by hiding a motor inside a bike's frame. To do so, I first need to figure out how Femke van den Driessche took the career-ending risk of having a motorized bike with her at the 2016 Cyclocross World Championships, despite having the cycling world at her feet. She was caught, becoming the only person to be banned for having a concealed motor. But there must be more to this story. So many hows, so many whys. How was she so careless? And why was cycling so very keen to move on and forget the scandal? I've tried so many avenues to get hold of Femke because I've got so many questions that I feel only she can answer, but so far I've been unable to locate her. Sat in my boxy hotel room in Aalst, just a few kilometres from Femke's home, I sit down and once again watch the tearful interview Femke gave Sportse back in 2016 after the motor was found. It's an interview I've watched many times before. The images, the reddened cheeks, her blonde hair tied up in a bun, the big clunky ring on her left-hand finger, are almost scarred in my mind. But, until now, I've largely ignored the giant sat to her right, a balding man dressed in a chunky knit cardigan with a show of concern on his face. I then turn to Het Nieuwsblad, one of Belgium's biggest websites, and there he is again, this time by himself, crying, intercut with shots of Femke dabbing her eyes in front of a roaring fire. It's Femke's father, Peter van den Driessche. In the days after the discovery, every frame containing a sorrowful Femke also included him. Perhaps he would be available and willing to talk about that day in Zolder. Perhaps I've been asking the folk of Aalst about the wrong person. It's not Femke I need to speak to, but Peter. Where can I find Peter van den Driessche? I'm Chris Marshall Bell, and from Stack, this is Ghost in the Machine. Episode 3, Cats, Pelicans, and Pigeons. So far on Ghost in the Machine, it's been a wild journey. We've discovered that mechanical fraud, better known as motor doping, has been a spectre plaguing and worrying cycling for the best part of a decade and a half. We've heard intriguing anecdotes and addressed the most explosive of allegations. We've also learned that, for those who love cycling, the thought of hiding a motor inside a bike is completely enraging, an offence to their sense of fairness, far worse than conventional forms of doping.
This is a kind of fraud I never could imagine that a sportsman should do that.
But many feel that although Femke is the only cyclist to have ever been caught with a concealed motor in their bike, the sports watching public may have been duped multiple times over by far bigger names.
He is there, man, but Cancellara has just ridden away at the moment. How far has he made that gap? Well, it's big enough that the cameras can't see it.
Spinning it up, that's Chris Froome. Is he going to be beaten on this day by Contador? Mano a mano, the pair of them. This is magnificent.
But no proof has ever been found. And everyone accused, including Fabian Cancellara, Alberto Contador, and Chris Froome, have all defended their record repeatedly. If I can't get hold of Femke, then it's Peter who I need to pin down. I quickly learn that Peter has a bit of history in the saddle himself. Born in 1969, he too competed in cyclocross, and aged 27 won a regional championship. A year later, he finished third in the National Cyclocross Championships. He was pretty good, and clearly passed on his cycling talents to his kids. But he never made it as a professional, instead setting up his own roofing business that worked in Vandrische in 1989. When the company went bankrupt in the wake of the Great Recession at the turn of the last decade, the court file stated that it had pivoted to retail and car repair. This was despite Dak Werken literally meaning roofing in Flemish. 2 months later, the company was set back up with the same name, and so it remains to this day. As Christoph and I sit in a pub, hey, we're in Belgium, what else are we meant to do? He notices something as we scroll through the company records.
Here you can see branch that they mean what can they do, what will they do, what are they allowed to do. And there you can see there is also a part car repair, and they also deal in bicycles. But that's strange because I didn't know that. It's new for me, it's a new element.
In fact, the roofing company lists 24 different activities, but there's also, like Christoph points out, the wholesale of bicycles and the manufacturing of bike parts. Dak Werken of Vandendriche also repair consumer items and have a license to operate gyms and fitness centres. In the course of my inquiries, I'm gifted Peter Vandendriche's phone number by an acquaintance. I want to ask him how he felt about a motor being found in Femke's spare bike. And so I hit the dial button. But he doesn't answer.
Let's try this over one more time.
I try a few more times, but still, he doesn't pick up. I then send him a WhatsApp message, but he doesn't respond. It's clear, Peter Vandendriche will not speak to me. But I'm not out of the Vandendriches just yet. You might remember Jos Smets, the former technical director of Belgian Cycling, telling us this.
Same thing, I hope that the environment of Femke will be more careful with her than with her brother. Because her brother Niels was penalised and suspended for 2 years for doping.
Wanting to find more out about Niels, I turn to Facebook. I immediately see that his cover photo shows five men posing with their backsides on show. What I find most interesting, though, is that Niels' Facebook page highlights that he races pigeons and that he's won various national championships. Now, I don't know about you, but I know absolutely nothing about pigeon racing. But I know a man who does.
My name is Didier Marlier. I graduated as a vet in 1990. And since 1993, I'm more or less employed in the racing pigeons world.
It's time we learned about pigeons with Didier. Bet you didn't expect that. And trust me, there's a reason we're heading off on this tangent. Didier is going to give us a crash course. Aside from racing the small birds as a hobby, he is the head of racing pigeon medicine at the University of Liège. If only I had known about that course when I was applying for university. I wonder if there's a department for beer, fruits and watching cyclocross. Anyway, Belgium, according to Didier, is the heartland of pigeon racing.
Pigeon racing has been defined, at least in Europe, as a sport in which you have one starting line, but a lot of finishing line.
How it works is that pigeon owners, called pigeon fanciers, breed their pigeons at home in shelters that are called pigeon lofts. 2 days before a race, fanciers take their competing pigeons to a society, and then all the pigeons are put into a truck and driven to the start line. On the day of the race, the pigeons are released and it's a race back to their respective lots. Most races are around 200 kilometers in length, roughly 7 times the distance of a cyclocross race.
We have special microchips on the pigeons to register the time at which pigeons are home. We know the distance between the releasing sites and our loft, and then we can easily measure the mean speed that the pigeon has done during the race.
So even though one pigeon might live a few kilometers closer to the start line than another, the winner is the pigeon who returns at the fastest average speed, not the one who returns home first. It's even more complicated than cycling's general classification. Didier tells me that the biggest pigeon race, the Tour de France of pigeon racing, takes place on the 1st July weekend every year. Pigeons start in Barcelona and have to fly 1,200 kilometers back to Belgium. And boy, are they fast.
They are perhaps released, I just say, at six in the morning, and the winning pigeons will perhaps be at home, just say, at nine in the evening. They will do perhaps the 1,200 kilometers in 12 hours. It's incredible. Incredible what these pigeons are able to do.
Incredible indeed. These tiny pigeons, weighing not much more than 500 grams, travel from northern Spain through the whole of France and back to Belgium at an average speed of 120 kilometers per hour. That's 75 miles an hour in old money. A cyclist with a hidden motor in their bike wouldn't even average 50k an hour. These little pigeons are rapid! As impressed as I am, the main reason I've got Didier on the phone to me is not because I want him to shed light on how good Femke's brother Niels is in the pigeon racing world, but because whenever I mention this niche sport to people during my research, those in the know all scream one word to me: doping. You see, it turns out that pigeon racing attracts as many cheats as cycling does.
I think that as long as you have races, you have money. As long as you have money, you have doping. You know, it's just the same in horse, in camelids, in dogs, and also in pigeons.
Didier has written extensive research papers into doping in racing pigeons. He's the expert. Pigeon racing's Mr. Anti-Doping.
The doping problem in racing pigeon is as old as the racing pigeon itself.
I wasn't expecting that. What Didier tells me is that doping is a stain on the sport that will probably never truly be eradicated. A bit like cycling then. Corticosteroids, anti-inflammatory drugs and anabolic steroids are to pigeon racing what EPO, testosterone, tramadol, and yes, maybe motors, are to bike racing.
Quite sometimes a pity to see that there are countries that does not do their best to fight doping in pigeons and other countries such as Belgium who do their best.
We have seen no evidence nor heard it alleged that Niels or his father Peter, who also races the small birds, have doped pigeons. Yet when I started this investigation into Femke van den Driessche and motor doping in cycling, I did not expect to have segued into pigeon doping. But it's that kind of story, and there's more to come.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra.
Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
I return to Niels's Facebook page and I see an image that stops me in my tracks. Is that who I think it is? I click on the photo, clearly taken at a pigeon racing awards ceremony, and see that the older gentleman posing with Niels is tagged. Yeah, it is who I think it is. It's Nico van Mulder. Nico was the family friend who Femke said was the owner of the bike found in the pits. Yes, the one with the motor found hidden inside. Nico backed her up. Many doubted that claim, and you can understand why there'd been questions. For starters, the bike was Femke's size, had her name printed on it, and Nico didn't even know how to activate the motor. I'd already been informed that Nico's best friend is Femke's father, Peter. And now I learn that Nico also shares a pigeon loft with Niels, Femke's brother. But more than that, he's Niels's pigeon racing mentor. Just who is Nico van Mulder? I search the internet for more information and find a 2016 report from the Belgian newspaper Het Laatste Nieuws. It points out that Nico, like his friends the Van den Driesjes, was also a cyclist in his youth. The newspaper then reveals that Nico was suspended from bike racing in 2004 because he, wait for it, punched another rider during a race. I now fully understand why so many people I speak to keep telling me that they think Femke's background was chaotic. Surely she'd have better judgment than to have Niels accompany her to races, a man with a checkered history in the sport. The big question now is, although the doped bike was Femke's spare one in the 2016 World Championships, did she ever use it in other races? I need to explore the streets of Aalst, a city 30 kilometres to the west of Brussels, where she was born and raised.
So Christoph, we're walking through the centre of Aalst now. Just tell me a little bit about this town.
Aalst is a very special city. When you say in Belgium you live in Aalst, then they say, oh no, oh my God.
Why?
It's because of the people are very different than in other cities in Flanders or Belgium. They are very open. What you see is what you get. So they are always honest, but they can, yeah, that can come in, or how do I say it, really hard.
That's like all Belgians, no? Because all Belgians are very direct and straight to the point.
No, there's a big difference. For example, in Aalst, if they don't like you, they say, you're shit, I don't like you.
Note to self, don't annoy the people of Aalst. As we wander the cobbled historic streets, Christoph regales me with a story from 2011. 5 years before Femke became sport's biggest news story for a few days, Aalst was in the worldwide headlines for an altogether different reason. A video had emerged showing the town's Catholic mayor engaging in a rather saucy sexual encounter with her boyfriend. Perched over the medieval walls of a Spanish castle's turrets, her lover, a successful surgeon, surveys the landscape from up high. With his shorts hovering around knee length, he and the mayor enjoy the vantage point in a manner like few others, if any, have ever before. The video, shot by some amused Russian tourists, was posted to a dodgy corner of the internet in 2007, but then found its way to social media 4 years later, branded as a sex tape. According to Christoph, though, the people of Aalst revelled in the absurdity of it all, and the mayor's popularity soared. It makes me wonder how they reacted to Femke getting caught with a motor. But the town's biggest attraction is not controversies, hard to believe as that may be. It's actually a 3-day winter carnival held every February. Here's Christoph again to tell us about it.
What are we watching, Christoph?
We're watching a video from Aalst Carnaval, the biggest party in town, in February. 100,000 of people from all corners in Belgium come to Aalst to laugh with anything, with anyone and anything.
I'm getting the impression that Aalst is a place that embraces not lawlessness, but taboo breaking every once in a while.
And then it's a big party in the city, but also that day you can laugh with everything, with anyone. If there is a police officer, you can say, hey mate, what are you doing? Go home, you don't belong here. They won't do a thing.
We continue to watch the parade. papier-mâché sculptures of figures from politics and pop culture are marched through the centre of the town. Thousands of people are dressed up in all sorts of wacky costumes.
And do you often dress up as well? Are you one of the main characters?
No, I'm not one of the main characters.
You disappoint me, Christoph.
Yeah, sorry.
I thought you were going to be this pelican or this parrot or someone.
I was in between the pelican. I was in the pelican, but you cannot see.
I believe you.
Anyway, I go back to watching footage from the 2016 Carnival.
The thing about Carnival is you have to laugh with everyone and with everything about what happened in the past months. And Femke was, of course, one of the stories that time. And the funny thing is that now we are watching the video with a lot of people around the circuit to watch and see people get dressed and done and are dancing, but Femke was there too to laugh with herself.
It's true. Just 7 days after being caught with a motor in a bike, Femke attended the carnival with her two brothers, despite being the butt of all jokes from her fellow local residents. As Christoph and I scroll through the internet, we find a report from Belgium newspaper Het Nieuwsblad, where Femke's named as one of the main topics of discussion during the Arles Carnival, next to terrorism and Queen Fabiola.
What is the headline, please?
The headline is Terroristen, Femke van den Driessen and Queen Fabiola, Arles Carnaval is ongoing. So those are the three main topics during Arles Carnaval.
So we've got a terrorist, the Queen and Femke van den Driessen. She was big news.
Yeah, that was the top three.
Remarkable.
It's a sign of her character that Femke joined in the festivities, and she even went in fancy dress. With her blonde hair in a bun, she dressed as a cat, with whiskers painted onto her cheeks. It seems quite strange to be out in public just days after her fall from grace in this playful and outlandish way. Does this speak of youthful nonchalance, or was she simply just confident that the carefree people of Arles, her community, wouldn't really be bothered about her transgression? My assumption that Femke was humiliated and her life ruined by this case is being called into doubt. Maybe it was like water off a duck's back for her. It's becoming quite clear that we cannot pigeonhole Femke, sorry, couldn't resist, into the box of an ordinary cyclist from an ordinary family, or, for that matter, an ordinary place. But what about now, almost a decade on? How is she regarded? A figure of fun? An enemy of cycling? A fraud? Or just another character in Arles' colourful history? It's time to head to a local bike race to find out. From April to October, every city, town and village in Flanders, Belgium will host at least one, often several more, local cycling races called Kermesses. There are junior, amateur and professional races.
So, Christoph, is this a major part of Belgian culture?
This is a part of Belgian culture. This is the heart of cycling. This is what it's all about. You see 100 amateurs racing, everyone's outside, the sun is shining, everyone is watching.
There really are. I buy a cold beer from the local bar and stroll around the race circuit.
Let me tell you what I can see there. There may be 200, 300 people. There is a van that has opened up into a shooting range. Basically, it's called a shooting club where you can win teddies and all sorts.
I take up position by the barriers, ready to see the riders on their next lap. I can feel the passion.
You know, if you want the ultimate football culture, you would go to England, you would go to Anfield and Liverpool, or you would go to La Bombonera to see Boca Juniors in Argentina. If you want to experience real cycling, you come here to Flanders, to Belgium. This is cycling.
As well as immersing myself into the local cycling culture, I'm also here to work. Who remembers Femke?
Femke van den Driessen.
I don't know who she is, no.
Do you remember in 2016, a Belgian cyclocross girl had a motor in her bike?
No, I'm sorry, no.
Femke van den Driessen.
What?
Femke van den Driessen.
What does that mean?
It's a name.
Oh.
Do you know who she is?
No, I'm sorry.
The next man I speak to recognises her name, but that's about it.
Yes, I know her a little bit. Cyclocross?
Yeah. And is there a story that you remember about Femke, maybe?
No.
You really don't know, do you?
No, but I know the name.
Finally, I meet someone who does properly recall her.
Femke van den Driessen. Do you know who that is?
Yeah.
Who is she?
Cyclist. No?
Yeah, she's a cyclist. Yeah. Do you remember why she is famous?
Yeah, her bike problem. Problem.
A breakthrough. What about the next person, I ask?
No idea who?
No clue.
She was the girl who had a motor in her bike.
Okay.
You remember the name now?
No. The only one I know with that is Fabian Cancellara.
Cancellara again! Remember episode 2 where we heard about that infamous video of him at the Tour of Flanders? The mention of motor doping seems to conjure up his name more often than it does Femke's. She seems to be largely forgotten, which surprises me. It might be 8 years since Wyatt spilled out of Femke's bike at the Cyclocross World Championships, but although she may not be very well remembered, the truth remains that the repercussions were seismic. In assessing the magnitude of Femke's wrongdoing, we need to know whether a doped bike in her possession was a one-off. Is it possible that she might have used this bike, with its concealed motor, on multiple occasions before the ill-fated World Championships? And if so, were others doing the same?
When you look back now, are there any points when you thought maybe this was happening from Femke in different races?
Afterwards, you can, looking back, and then we thought, yeah, that race and that race, probably she's already using it.
Rudy De Bie was her national team coach when she was competing for Belgium. He has no doubt that Femke used the motor in previous races.
I can remember two races that I can tell she using it before the Worlds.
What were those races?
Koppenberg and European Championships.
You think she won the European Championships with the motor?
I'm not sure about, but...
Why? Was there one time when there was an acceleration?
No, it was not especially, but if you know Femke before and her other races, it was not that spectacular.
For Femke's own national coach to be saying this is quite the indictment. Let's quickly retrace her rise to prominence. At the start of November 2015, after a few impressive results, Femke was being spoken about as Belgium's rising star. The Koppenberg Cross is one of Belgium's biggest cyclocross races, held every year on November the 1st. Riders have to do 8 laps, each featuring the mythical Koppenberg climb. The couples are slippery, the gradients are hideously steep, and there are 15,000 spectators, most of whom are several beers deep and getting stuck into some frites and mayo. When Femke raced the 2015 edition, she was the one to watch.
Okay, we are now watching the infamous Koppenberg Cross race. Christoph, what are we watching? Because it's quite something, this.
Yeah, this is the Koppenberg climb. It's super steep. Don't know if you've been there one day, but it's super steep. And Femke goes really fast on it.
She's like 10 meters ahead of them all.
Yeah, she goes and goes and pushes.
You can actually say that she is going faster than what some of the men go. She is absolutely flying. Just to give you an idea of this, the climb is, what, maybe 300 meters long? And within 15 seconds, she's got a lead of 7 seconds lead in about 10 meters.
Yeah, she stays in the saddle. The others are pushing their pedals. Yeah. They're dancing on their pedals, but she stays in the saddle.
It's quite an astounding piece of evidence, I think.
It's worth reminding ourselves that watching a rider stay in the saddle proves nothing. But Femke maintained her advantage and finished second at the Koppenberg Cross. And understandably, she was pretty damn chuffed.
I didn't expect to perform here. It is certainly special that I finished second here. It certainly gives me confidence. But on the other hand, I hope I can keep this form.
Now, there is no evidence that Femke used a motor in the Koppenberg Cross. But as we just heard, Rudy thinks she did. 6 days after that race, Femke travelled north to the Netherlands for the European Championships and claimed the biggest victory of her career. But one rival later told the press that everyone had a strange feeling about Femke's bike. Wanting to know more, I reach out to her Club Up Mat No Drugs teammate, Elena Valentini.
This year she was really, really good, so I started to look at what she was doing. And for me it was strange because she really never warm up at the races. And I say, yeah, well, maybe she don't need it, but when we try maybe the loop before the races, she looks normal. But then when the race started, she was completely on another level, and yeah, was something strange.
The day after she was caught, Femke was asked about the Kuppenberg Cross and European Championships by Christoph in the interview for Sportza.
Femke, do you understand that people are now questioning your performances from this year?
If I had the bike with the motor, I would have had a more consistent season than I have had. I always peaked for those periods.
Videos are now popping up of you flying up the Kuppenberg.
That was a peak. And the week after, it was the European Championships, and I peaked for that.
It's tempting to say we should take Femke's word for it. No evidence has ever been presented that she used a motor in the Kuppenberg Cross and the European Championships. The UCI then tell me that there were videos and photos of her using the very same bike in other races, identified by specific marks on the seat tube and, get this, the control button on the handlebars, which was visible in some photographs. Is it possible she was on the path to becoming a cycling pariah even then? Was this poor judgment on her part? Or was Femke just really a victim in all of this? Jos Smets, the big dog at Belgian Cycling back in 2016, is certain of that.
This was something that was done her environment. And her environment was her family. Yeah.
It's entirely plausible, as both Jos and Rudy suggest, that Femke's ban was just another chaotic episode in the world of the Van den Driesjes. Apart from denying ownership of the bike in that one interview with Christoph and Sportza, the day after the doped bike was discovered, Femke has never spoken publicly. Neither has her family, or the family friend Nico van Mulder, who claimed, along with Femke, that the bike containing the motor was his. We still don't really understand why they were so careless, nor the extent of the scandal. All through this inquiry, I've been conscious that at the centre of the story is a young woman, still just a 19-year-old teenager at the time she was caught. So what about today, 8 years on? How is Femke? She's now in her late 20s. What's she up to? How did getting caught for motor doping alter the course of her life? I finally acquire Femke's phone number, and I sweat about calling her. But in the back of my mind, I know that the amount and type of questions I have for her are just too much for a phone call. If we are going to get the answers we need, I must sit down with her. Christoph lives only a couple of streets away from Femke in Aalst. He proposes that we just turn up and knock on the door. I'll be honest, this scares me. In a decade of journalism, I've never doorstepped anyone. And I have absolutely no idea what kind of reception we would likely get. What if Peter, the imposing figure of her father, is the one who answers? But I'm now too far into the story, and I know it's my only way of getting answers.
Hallo, is er iemand thuis van de familie? De mama?
Ja,
de papa?
Die zou het vragen.
Ja, of de broer? Kan je eens even vragen? Ja, ja. Dankjewel.
Oké, so what? I think that was the housekeeper or someone. Someone who's doing some jobs in the house, cleaning, I guess.
Yeah.
They closed the door and they said, I'm gonna ask if anybody wants to come. I didn't say my name.
No, of course not.
You've been listening to episode 3 of Ghost in the Machine. Subscribe to the podcast to make sure you don't miss any new episodes. Ghost in the Machine is a Stack production. It is presented by me, Chris Marshall-Bell, the podcast's general classification contender. It was written by myself and David Bradford, the sports director of the series. Sound design is by Tom Worley, the podcast's lead out man. It was produced by Pete Donaldson, the road captain. A special thanks to super domestique Christoph Muhl. And a thanks also to the Free Swan Years, Finn Ranson, Charlie Morgan, and Katie Baxter. Chapeau.
Ghost in the Machine is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
The biggest names in tennis are coming to Paris for the most anticipated Roland Garros in years. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled tournament access as the world's top players in tennis face off against each other. Will the veteran champions continue their dominance, or will a fresh face emerge to challenge their legacy on the clay courts? Daily live coverage of this epic showdown begins Monday, May 20th. Don't miss a matchup. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app.
And hit subscribe.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.